I'll have to fully start us off with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Start with introductions, presentations, announcements. Matt.
Thank you, sir. Members of the board, thank you for being here today. Just a few announcements to start with. This week, we welcomed a new employee, Kip Rustenberg, as our in-service training manager. Kip spent a little over 20 years with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, retired last week, and we were able to scoop her up to start this week. So we're excited to have her. Look forward to all the good things she's going to bring to Arizona Post over the next 10 years. Just a couple things we're missing today. We're missing Sheriff Masher, Matt Medina, and Jamie Kelly. John Tellier from the Attorney General's Office will be providing independent advice. There's a couple items. If you take a look at your agenda, there's a couple things we need to table for this week. One is the final action, number 3, regarding Mark Mann. We're going to table that this month and hopefully bring it back next month. We're also going to table, and I apologize, item L. It was a last-minute addition when we did an agenda update this week. But after further reflection, we're going to push it back. And then the last thing in your consent agenda, number 3 is Guadalupe Paz. It was a consent agreement, but the paperwork was never received by our office, so we need to pull that matter off the consent agenda. That does it for announcements. Okay. If you'd like me to just start into my director's report.
Please, sir. Thank you.
Just want to go over a few things we've done. I still partner with the Arizona, the ACOP training committee. We're currently working on training for the summit, which will be held in Flagstaff in July, as well as their annual conference in Laughlin in September. Just so everyone's aware, we will be hosting a 4-hour training class on Thursday, the week of the summit, and it's going to be on the 7 points of wellness, of officer wellness, and we're really excited about it. We're also going to bring some additional training at ACOP is earlier in the week, reference officer wellness as well, so I think they'll tie together pretty good. But again, we're excited about that training that Arizona Post will be hosting. And then just a reminder, we'll also be hosting our monthly meeting in July up there at the summit on Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 4. Hope to see everyone there. A couple things I've done over the last month. I went up to the PANT meeting. That's the collection of law enforcement leaders in Yavapai County. It was up in Sedona a couple weeks ago. I got an opportunity to speak to the group about things that we're doing moving forward. I also got an opportunity to meet the new chief from Sedona, Charles Husted. He a recent retiree from Sacramento PD. So it was a really good meeting, good information discussion, good feedback from the group on things that Arizona Post is doing around the state. I also had an opportunity to attend a Naval Postgraduate Executive Seminar a couple weeks ago on complex coordinated terrorist attacks. Again, this is one of those things where it was nice to have me in the room to sit there and listen to what they're presenting, because it had agency heads from around the metropolitan area regarding terrorist attacks, and any training forthcoming, we would be able to assist with them putting that on. As of right now, nothing's come out of that, but we're looking forward to partnering with them to provide training in the future. Also, I continue to attend the West Valley Chiefs meeting. Again, it's nice for me. I oftentimes just go there just to listen to see if there's any concerns from the different leaders from around the state. And this is a really good opportunity for all the West Valley police chiefs to get together and talk. And again, I like to go there and be involved in the meetings. And finally, I had an opportunity last week or 2 weeks ago to go down to Maricopa County or Maricopa PD and meet with Chief Stahl, spend some time down there, see how the department's operating. But more importantly, we're going to partner with him on resiliency training for officers. They hosted a class earlier in the year for train the trainer program. For a resiliency program, and then we're going to partner with them, and we're going to provide locations and space around the state to put on that training in conjunction with. It's as Chief Stahl's. It's his collaboration with the FBINA. So we're excited about that partnership. And if you'd like, I can. Any questions about the director's report? If not, I can move into current events. And I'm going to hold any budget issues. I normally provide that in the director's report. I'm going to hold that because after this I have the budget presentation for all of for the upcoming fiscal year.
Okay, thank you. I just want to comment, you also had a visit at my office, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate you coming out, and I encourage you to continue coming out and making the rounds. So thank you for that.
And I enjoy that, and I am something I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get around in the state to do that, to hear, because, again, sometimes here down in the valley, we don't know what's going on around. So I'm really trying to get out and meet with police chiefs and sheriffs around the state to see what we can do to make their lives better, what we can do to help, what kind of training they're looking for, issues they're having in hiring, issues they're having in retention, anything we can do to help partner with all the 160 agencies that we serve. So, no, thank you for taking the time to meet with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. And that brings us to the legislative update. No, current events.
Current events. We continue to work on efficiencies. As you know, some of our cases stretch a really, really long time, and oftentimes it's when there's a criminal investigation involved. So what we've decided to do is we're going to no longer just, as a rule of thumb, hold our investigation until the criminal investigation is done, worked its way through the court system. So oftentimes we'll get all the documents, we'll get the internal, we'll get the criminal, and we just put it on hold. So for moving forward, and it'll be on a case-by-case basis how far we take it, but we're going to start preparing the cases, getting them ready to present to the board so there's not that long delay. Again, it's just a change in procedure, in my opinion, to become a little more efficient, because as you know, sometimes we have cases that are two, almost 3 years old that borderline on when the officer certification lapses. And we just want to make sure that we're not dragging those out unnecessarily. So, again, just a procedural change I wanted you to be aware of. But, again, we're never going to interfere with the criminal investigation. So on a case-by-case basis, if we think it would impact the criminal investigation, we'll just hold off like we had done in the past. A couple of new chiefs I want to report that were certified this week. Charles Husted, again, he was able to successfully complete everything and in record time, I would say. And he was from Sedona, and then Drew Sanders from Page as well went through all the waiver process, and he was certified earlier this week. And I want to just shout out to Cindy. She works with all that stuff. She has to go through all their training records, and again, sometimes these are on a quick timeline, and she does a really, really good job of prioritizing that and getting that done and getting people up and up to speed and certified in the state of Arizona. We're still looking for an IT system administrator. We're actually we had an advertisement last month. We're going to be doing interviews next week. We have a couple candidates that we're excited about, but again, I've found it's a very, very difficult position to hire for, to find the person with the right experience that wants to come work for a state government agency. So I'll keep you up to date on that, but again, we do have interviews scheduled for next Friday morning. And then Director Ryan, we had a victory this month. After your direction last month, giving me permission to make the rules changes from 21 to 18 for someone starting the academy for the Department of Corrections, on April 24th, I hand-delivered the paperwork that Seth so expertly put together for us. I hand-carried that over, and at about 2 or 3 in the afternoon, it was official. The minute I handed it in, it was effective. And if anyone's driven on the I-10 towards Tucson, you've seen the signs that say that the DOC is now hiring at 18. So I think that was a big victory. It was a lot of work behind the scenes that Director Ryan's office did, and we were just able to be a little bit of an implement to get that accomplished. So again, I think that's exciting news, and I think the director's going to cover some of the numbers in his report, a couple items down on the agenda.
Thank you.
Legislative update, if I would like me
yes,
to move
please.
On. It's, as you know, everything's slowing down in the legislature for bills and whatnot. There's no current issues that are impacting Arizona Post right now. I continue to meet with all the different legislative liaisons for all the government agencies that affect law enforcement, and there's nothing really that's going to impact us now, and right now we're just waiting for the budget. And I'm told that hopefully that'll be dropped next week. But again, we'll see how that goes. And that's all I have for legislative updates. Anyone have any questions?
We're going to talk budget.
Let's talk budget, the fun stuff. Everyone should have received their packet for fiscal year 19-20. If it looks familiar to last year, it should, because it's almost identical. Again, like I've said previously, Jack Lane and Lynn Perkle worked very hard to put us in a really, really good financial position. As you know, I think I announced earlier this year The governor's proposed budget includes about $190,000 more than we got last year, so we're just a little over $1 million in appropriated funds, which would only be the second year where we've ever gotten appropriated funds. We normally survive solely on CGEF funds. But we are budgeting for that extra money. Just to give you an idea, the only changes to our budget this year is about $91,000 increase, which is a 1.4% increase over last year's budget. That's almost all attributed to what I'm proposing, a 5% raise for all employees, kind of to match what DPS is proposing as well. So that's the proposal. Right now, we have about $2.8 million in a cash balance, again, which puts us in a very strong financial position. CGEF funds can continue to fluctuate. Right now, we're down about $227,000 for the year. But based on last year's appropriations of $837,000 we got from the governor's budget, we're actually, our CGEF expenditures are down $974,000 because we were able to use, and that was the proposal we wrote last year, was to use all of the governor's appropriated funds for basic training to pay back the academies for each successful graduate. So again, it's been a really nice trade-off, and it's put us in a really, really good financial position. So again, the only difference you're seeing this year in this year's budget for the most part is the 5% raise that we've already included in all your documentation. All the positions that you see is a 5% raise for employees across the board. And again, that's just keeping in line with what DPS has proposed to do, since we're an umbrella agency of the Department of Public Safety. With that, I have no more information to present, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have regarding the budget for next year.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Matt. I think we and DPS will begin our discussions about what we're estimating the CGEF fund to be again next year for budget submission. I believe we're still going to estimate about a 3% decline in CGEF, but I have had discussions and heard a presentation by somebody from the department or from the Office of the Courts that says they feel like that may be bottoming out at this point.
Okay.
So he's hopeful that we may see a flat or even a slight increase going forward. Again, the number of officers coming online and for whatever reason is probably going to add into that. And then I've also heard that the movement away from writing tickets as a corrective action has maybe not produced the results that some folks have hoped, and there may be a move back to writing more tickets. So again, those things combined, maybe we see at least not a continued decline, but a stabling out, or maybe even a slope back up. But we'll see.
Yeah, and it's marvelous. It's just amazing how it fluctuates so much from month to month. And actually, this month, I think our last reporting, we're actually up. We're above what our normal monthly average is. So it's
and that's all, again, it's all based on tickets. And then also when state income tax starts being paid, they can go in and take out a state income tax to pay for a lot of this. So that's why we see kind of this end of the year kind of uptick in CGEF funds, because the courts are going in and taking those tax returns and using them to pay things that people owe.
And we budget annually. We budget for 1,000 officers to reimburse our academies for 1,000 officers. And as of the end of the fiscal year, we've projected we'll probably only be at about a little over 800, which is, you know, obviously 200 less than normal. But again, there seems to be no rhyme or reason to those numbers. They just continue to fluctuate. But we feel safe at 1,000 that we can continue to fund them appropriately at 1,000, and we'll just, you know, use the rest as a savings if those positions aren't filled. In my travels, I do talk to academy directors, and it seems though everyone is fairly happy with the new financial arrangement that Jack created last year with Lynn on the $2,500 per successful graduate, and then $900 if someone completes 50% of the academy. It seems to be working really, really, really well.
But there's no intention this budget year to increase those numbers.
There's not. Not at this time. But that's definitely something we could revisit next year if we continue to get the governor's appropriated funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Chairman, Matt, the budget for next year has a balance as of June 30th of almost $2.3 million. Has there been discussion about how much is the appropriate amount to have as a balance going forward? That seems pretty high to me.
No, and it does seem high to me as well. I can tell you, in speaking to staff that's been here, the last several years have been very, very rocky. We've changed the way we've done things. We no longer provide the apartments for the local academies. So we've shifted. We've also had some vacancy savings. We haven't filled an IT administrator position for, it's almost a year now. So again, that's something we'll be evaluating in fiscal year 19-20. What is the appropriate balance to carry? Because I would love nothing more than to be able to increase the amount of funding we provide to our academy statewide. Yeah. So it's definitely something I'd like to do. In addition, we haven't hosted the Arizona Leadership Development Program, ALP program, it's over almost over a year now. We're looking to revamp that, and there'll be associated costs with that. But no, that's a great question. That's something we'll be evaluating over the next fiscal year.
Mr. Lefebvre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Matt and Paul. I mean, from a cash management standpoint with a budget, especially a budget that fluctuates so much, I mean, we struggle with that at our agency as well, and we really try hard to keep, if we can, two quarters of funding on hand. You know, what happens if something happens and the CGF funds just come in much less than what somebody was expecting? So I would, talk with Phil over at DPS and maybe get a good understanding, because I remember we had this conversation last year about spending down the surplus to try and cover some of the costs. And yeah, I think you run the risk if you get too low of a budget of a balance on hand of being able to pay bills without, the CGF revenue and knowing what it's going to be. And maybe the governor's contribution changes that formula a little bit. But
no, definitely does. And to your point, I am told there was a point here about a year and a half, 2 years ago, where they were worried about paying just some of the normal bills. So again, I think now we need to, now that we're doing much better, we need to figure out where that balance is. But no, that's a great idea. Thank you, sir.
Any other questions or comments? I would just add that we want to make sure we do a shout out to the governor and the governor's office for support, because this was a critical, makes a critical difference for us.
So absolutely. Incredibly supportive of everything we're doing.
Thank you, sir. And that brings us to,
I think we need a motion on that, sir.
Oh, sorry.
To approve that it.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the budget as proposed.
Motion, do I have a second?
Christopher Pittman, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. Motion carries.
Thanks,
thank
sir.
You, sir. Thank you. Then I have the consent agenda up, and I guess the consent agenda is what we have in front of us, excluding item G3. Is that correct?
Just one of the items on G3.
Oh, just one of the items on G3? Which one is that?
That's global debate clause.
Okay. So I need a motion regarding the consent agenda, excluding one item in G3, Guadalupe B. Paz or Paz.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the consent agenda as amended to exclude Guadalupe Paz.
Have a motion, do I have a second?
Second.
Motion is second. Any discussion? Yes, ma'am.
Who seconded the motion?
Oh.
Mark Annals.
Oh, you did? Okay, sorry. Chief Kelly. So just as a gentle reminder, we're supposed to mention our names when we make motions, so thanks for comments. Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay. Motion carries. And that brings us to a report from the Arizona Department of Corrections, Director Ryan.
Mr. Chairman, members, since our last meeting, the current correctional officer and trainee vacancy of the 6,655 positions is 1,211, or 18.2%. There are 113 cadets currently in COTA, consisting of four classes. There are five future academies scheduled. Currently, 40 cadets are scheduled to include three regionals, May 20th in Florence, 12 currently scheduled, May 27th at COTA, 25, June 3rd, the Lewis Regional 9 at COTA, On June 10th, currently zero are scheduled, and at Safford Regional, six. In terms of our rush unit and institutional recruitment teams, who have attended 38 high schools and community colleges to recruit applicants who are graduating this month. The response from students and staff at the high schools has been positive and netted a total of 65 applicants in the 18 to 21 year age range. 46 of the 65 applicants have started the hiring process, and 33 of those are already in CODA or scheduled to attend a CODA class. So, again, I want to thank AZ Post for your support, and the emergency provision has kicked in, and we are recruiting and hiring as we speak. So, thank you.
Standing. Any questions for the director? Seeing none, thank you, sir. That brings us to a petition for applicant Ben Barlow, Colorado City Marshal's Office. Seth.
Thank you. Good morning. Seth Hargreaves, Assistant Attorney General. Before you, you have a petition from the Colorado City Marshal's Office for a waiver of the 7-year restriction regarding past drug use for applicant Ben Barlow. In this particular case, this individual is, it appears to be 6 months short of that 7-year time period from his last drug use. This petition is kind of consistent with what you've been seeing recently before you. In the past couple of months, the board has granted similar requests for applicants who are at least three years short of meeting the 7 years. So this is a request for a waiver of that 7-year period for someone who is 3 months short. I believe Marshall Askerlin is here to address you as well, but before we get to him, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions, Mr. Hargreaves? Seeing none, we'll hear from the Marshal. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Mark Askerlin. I'm the Marshal in Colorado City, Arizona. And I've just come before you today to ask for your consideration in this waiver of this young man. He is young. He's 22 years old. He has a clean record since the age of 16, at which point his father passed away. He got a little bit angry at the world and experimented with some drugs, none of which became addictive or became a problem. He has since overcome that. He's got a fiance and a baby on the way. And we have hired him as one of our officers there in Colorado City. He's currently certified in Utah, as we are a border town. And I'm just asking for your consideration in this waiver of his drug usage.
Thank you, sir. Any questions? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Paul Ayler, I move that the board grant the request for waiver of the 7-year restriction from AACR 13-4105A14 based upon the information submitted by the Colorado City Marshal's Office. I believe that the best interests of the law enforcement profession would be served and the public welfare and safety would not be jeopardized by this waiver.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Andy LaFever, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay.
Nay.
I have one nay.
Two nays.
Two nays. Motion carries. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
That brings us to our final action cases. Luis G. Ruiz, case 17-177. Mr. Bronco, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mark Brechtel with the Attorney General's Office. I have three cases that I'll be presenting today. The first one is the Officer Ruiz matter. Officer Ruiz is a Tucson officer. He is here today in the audience with his attorney, Mike Story, as well. In front of the board is an administrative law judge decision that Post recommends that the board adopt. And in this decision, we held a hearing on March 5th. The hearing was over two allegations of dishonesty, and the administrative law judge adopted the findings of fact and conclusions of law in this decision that Officer Ruiz was dishonest, and he was dishonest to his supervisor, and then he was dishonest after a notice of investigation was initiated and a Garrity was provided. So there are essentially two allegations that the judge sustained. In a case like this, the remedy is revocation. And the case stems from Officer Ruiz, who was working late at night on a shift on May 14th, 2017. He was in the last 5 minutes of his shift when the on-duty watch commander instructed the outgoing squad, his outgoing squad, to sign back on, put back on your uniform, go back to the road. Officer Ruiz, who was in his locker room, had changed out, and he decided to go home for the night and not sign back on. The case, though, arose the next day when the sergeant who ordered everyone back on the road challenged Officer Ruiz to explain why you didn't, and Officer Ruiz was dishonest to that sergeant. Eventually, a internal investigation was conducted, and after the notice of investigation and Garrity, Officer Ruiz was again dishonest. And that was the crux of the case. That's what the judge held. And we have violations of A8, A9, and A12. And Post recommends revocation.
Let's see if there are any questions for you first. Any questions for Mr. Brockdell?
Mr. Chairman, Paul Aylor, I need to recuse myself on this matter.
Okay, sir. So noted. Thank you. Okay, seeing none, thank you. Well, Mr. Story, are you in? Would you like to say anything, or your client?
Officer Ruiz was going to speak.
Sure, please.
Yes.
Please approach.
Thank you for having me. My name is Officer Luis Ruiz, and I'll make five points since I only have 5 minutes to speak. I was reinstated back in September of 2018. I was able to work full uniform, and I was assigned to the intelligence center at Tucson Police, which gives me access to more sensitive information than even patrol officers have. Those two allegations that were given against me, one was failure to obey an order, the merit council in Tucson found that there was no direct order for me to follow. I was given a suspension of 80 hours, which I gladly took, and I'm here only to request that you reconsider my petition to continue to work as a police officer. I am trustworthy, and if any of you has any opportunity to work directly with me, you will find that out, no questions asked. My current chain of command has currently Captain Diana Duffy, Lieutenant Jennifer Turner, have asked me to work a sensitive assignment in full uniform with full patrol vehicle in the undocumented center for asylum seekers. And that is a politically sensitive issue in my hometown, yet my current chain of command trusts me in my ability to carry that out satisfactorily and in putting the image of my department within this community in a positive way. I have testified in court since I've been reinstated in full uniform with homicide cases and felony aggravated assault cases. The judge in those cases deemed my testimony credible and worthy. I take full responsibility of my actions, and the incident that has brought me here today does not make me less able to perform the duties of a patrolman in full capacity, or in a way that's going to be dishonorable to the profession. I could have handled, the reason I'm here, the incidents that brought me here could have been handled differently on my end, and I wouldn't be here today if I had the wisdom back then to act and react in a different way. I want to continue to be a patrolman because I genuinely care about the people in the profession, and I genuinely care about interacting with the community in a way where I can make a change in people's perception of law enforcement and in people's perception of the police career. for the police field as a whole. I have been an officer for about 11 years, and I have never been disciplined or have never been reprimanded other than this particular case that has brought me here. I hope I can continue to serve for many more years, because to me this is more than just a plain job or just for me to get a paycheck every 2 weeks. I understand that there's consequences for my actions, and I take full responsibility of those actions and of whatever consequences you decide to give me. I hope you look at the totality of the circumstances in my case and base your decision considering my 11 years of service with no discipline, where I have served with honor, respect, integrity, and empathy. I have nothing else to say.
Any questions, Mr. Reed?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Trevor?
When you said you just testified in court and the judge found your testimony to be credible, that's not normal for a judge to state something like that unless there was a discovery hearing or a Brady hearing to discern whether or not your integrity had been in question going into the hearing. Is that the case?
She didn't tell me specifically. She asked me a few questions about my reinstation or me being reinstated and me being in full capacity, and if the Civil Service Commission of Tucson had given me full back pay and had me fully reinstated. And she asked those questions in front of the defense and the prosecution, and then I was dismissed after that.
Okay, but did the Pima County Attorney's Office put you on Brady list?
They did.
Okay. And then one more question. You were getting dressed out before the end of your shift in the locker room when the OIT came in and told you that you guys were going back out on the street. Is that normal at Tucson PD to dress out before your shift ends?
It is. Every once in a while, officers, within the last 30 minutes of shift is a debrief, and within 5 minutes before, for example, at the time I secured at 0300, just a few minutes before people would go to the locker room, I turned off my radio so I didn't hear the sergeant give that direction over the radio. And then I went into the locker room. I undressed. I had an interaction with another officer who had indicated that he thought that that we would stay back out to work overtime because other officers were changing back in. And I decided to leave. And because I asked the officer how many people would stay, and he gave me a few names. So I took it as not specifically a direct order, but maybe it's a volunteer type of scenario, and I decided to take off. And then the next day, I spoke to that sergeant, and I basically just kept my mouth shut and had him tell me what he thought. And he asked me to put 30 minutes of vacation time on the clock, even though I left at 3 in the morning. And that was it. And months later, the investigation is initiated, me leaving or me knowing that it was a direct order or not. That was the question throughout the investigation, whether I knew it was a direct order or whether it was not a direct order, whether it was a request. I've always said that I was aware that the direction was given, but I've always said that there was no direct order because I didn't hear him, the sergeant that gave that direction, over the radio. But because I was notified by another officer, the argument is that I did have knowledge that it was a direct order by that supervisor that gave that direction over the radio.
Why did he have you burn 30 minutes of your own time if you finished your shift?
Because he basically said that if I didn't put the 30 minutes time, that he would push me through the internal affairs investigation. So because I didn't want to headbutt with a supervisor, I just agreed, put the 30 minutes. But my logs, when I logged off, shows me at 03 or 020 or 059-ish. And I believe the direction over the radio came at 02:58, if I remember correctly.
Any further discussion? Just so I'm clear, this incident happened in 2017.
Yes, sir.
You reinstated when?
September of 2018.
2018?
Yes, sir.
You have, are there any supervisors here with you today?
No, sir.
Okay. Any further questions or discussion? I'll entertain a motion.
This is never easy, but again, it's based on the merit of the investigation that I make this motion. And make a motion to accept the amended administrative law judge decision and under post violations A8, 9, 10, 12, and also I request a sanction of revocation.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Call for the vote. I have a motion and a second. Call for the vote. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you. And that brings us up to case 17-104, Charles K. Foley. Mr. Brockdale.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mark Brockdale with the Attorney General's Office. Next case is also out of the Tucson Police Department involving an officer, Charles Foley. I don't believe that he or his attorney were present, although I've not even met his attorney. No one's standing up. Okay. So in front of you is a motion for reconsideration. Just a little bit of a short backstory. I've been assigned to post for about 7 months now, and I've taken 19 files, the oldest files that have been waiting to be litigated off of the shelf, and they're assigned to me. This case is one of the 19 files, the Foley matter. And this is the only case where my office is requesting that allegation number one be modified. The other allegations in the other files were proceeding forward to either hearing or resolution. So in front of you is a request to modify an allegation, and specifically that the current allegation from the overview and the complaint which the board adopted is that Officer Foley, back on August 7th, 2015, committed forgery. And what I am requesting is that that allegation be amended and that instead it read, as it stated in the motion, is that on August 17th, 2015, that Officer Foley failed to obey a court order, specifically a divorce decree. And just by way of background in this case, in 2015, the Foleys, Mr. and Mrs. Foley, were divorced. It was a bitter divorce, and it was a non-communicative divorce. And but a divorce decree was entered by a Superior Court judge, and the judge in the decree split an Ameritrade account, TD Ameritrade account, between the two. And that particular account had been a joint tenancy account. Now, I had to crack open my law books and go into family law to understand what is a joint tenancy trading account between a husband and wife, and what effect does a dissolution decree have on it. Without the dissolution decree, either husband or wife, if when they were married, had the ability to go into that joint tenancy account and withdraw any amount of money at any time without asking the other permission. It's a joint tenancy account. But then there's a divorce, the decree is entered into, the judge, in the state's opinion, awards half of it as sole and separate property to Teresa Foley and then half of it to Officer Foley. Fast forward, 6 years later, Officer Foley, Tucson Officer Foley, decides that he wants his share of that joint tenancy account. And so he decides to close the account. He goes to Ameritrade and closes the account. And he does it unilaterally. He He doesn't go through his attorney. He doesn't go back to family court. The state's position is that he does not contact his ex-wife and ask permission. He does it unilaterally. He walks into Ameritrade, identifies himself. The account is closed. And so the account is closed. The check is given to him. It's in the amount of about $4,000 and some change. Officer Foley testified at the civil service hearing that he deposited all of the money into his personal account that day, and he intended to give his ex-wife half of it. The Pima County Attorney's Office detectives investigated this matter on behalf of Mrs. Foley when she found out that the account had been closed. And the detectives had acquired bank records and confirmed that Mr. Foley, on the day that he closed the account and received the check, that on that day he did deposit the full amount into his account. From there, the facts are in dispute. And so what has happened is, if the board decides to amend and to adopt allegation number one, as is requested, that the state will file a notice of hearing, and then we will go in front of an administrative law judge to issue a subpoena. We have to go through our administrative law judge to acquire a civil subpoena, and we're going to acquire bank records of Mr. Foley's after the day that he deposited the check. We don't have that information. And that information may support allegation number two, which is that Officer Foley committed theft, because he kept, in the state's position is that Officer Foley kept her portion of that check, of that account, for over 18 months. And it was only after she discovered that that account had been closed that he paid her back. So allegation number two has to deal with theft. And then allegation number three has to deal with whether Officer Foley was honest to the Pima County detectives when they interviewed him. So the request is to amend allegation number one to reflect what I think is a more realistic allegation, which is that you can't unilaterally make decisions on assets that have been awarded by in a divorce decree. You have to go back to court, and when you don't, you can either face civil contempt proceedings through an order to show cause in family court. Certainly Officer Foley, who was a Tucson officer, should have known that, should have known better, should have done something else and didn't. So that's the purpose for the motion to reconsider, is to change allegation number one, to keep allegation number two and allegation number three, and then we proceed forward, acquire some additional bank records, and move for hearing.
So I have a question, Mark. So
please.
If I remember this case correctly, how I got here was we viewed a forgery of the ex-wife's name. He did sign her name after they were divorced, correct?
He did. On the day that, yes. Okay. Yes,
and
Mr.
That's
Chairman.
That's the elements of forgery, right? So the Criminal Act really is not just civil. It's actually the Criminal Act of signing her name.
The Criminal Act would be what was his intention when he signed his name. And the evidence in the record to date, and this is almost a four-year-old case, is that he did what he said what he's saying he did. He deposited it into his bank account. That's what the record in the file indicates, that he did follow through with that day when he signed her name to the check. What makes this case...
That doesn't make it less of a crime. He put the money in his own account. She didn't have any access to that account, correct?
She did not.
So that's still the crime. That's the intent. It doesn't matter what he did 6 months down the road with the money, what he did the day after the money. He signed her name, which he had no authority to do, to access funds that he had no authority to access at that level, and turned it into his own account. You have his intent.
The state's position is that goes to allegation number two as opposed to allegation number one, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
And it has to do with, I'll just tell you what I focused on was the uniqueness of the account. It's a joint tenancy account, and he was awarded half of that account. It's in the decree, and his name was still on that account. He was able to walk in there and close the account, and the information in the record is that they just said pay her half, and we're done. And that's what Ameritrade, that's what appears to be in the record from what Ameritrade said. It's the state's position that, that the fact and the uniqueness of the actual account waters down that whole thought process of this is a forgery, this isn't a forgery. It's just more realistic to go with it's a failure to obey a court order.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to recuse myself. Paul Ehler, this matter was submitted to the Attorney General's Office, Criminal Division, and our office declined to pursue criminal charges. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, question. So is the is it the question that we don't think he committed theft because he held the money, or we're just we need to get one before we can get two? Because I kind of, I mean, I'm hearing what the chair's saying, and I tend to agree that while I understand the complications of the type of account and wanting to do that, I mean, he did take the money, and he did hold the money, and he did not give the money to the person he was supposed to give it to, which I think meets the definition of theft.
Mr. Lefevre, that is the state's position, and that is allegation number two, that he kept her portion of the account for almost 18 months until she decided and she discovered it, and she reached out and to find out where her portion of the account was. That goes to allegation number two.
So, Mr. Chairman, so do we, if we don't accept one, but we accept two and three, does that damage our ability to do what I think the board wants to do?
The state's position is that that is more aligned to the argument of the case that after he deposited the money, his intention was to keep it, and he in fact did keep it. And that goes to allegation number two. But at the time that he cashed the check, and that's where the forgery comes in, it's what was his intention, what was between his ears, his subjective intent at the moment of cashing the check, that the evidence in the file right now is not there.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, but I mean, in essence, we could revoke a certification on number two or three individually. We don't need all three.
That is correct, Mr. Lefevre.
No further discussion. I'll entertain a motion.
Yes, sir. Mr. Silver.
Accept the recommendation of the Attorney General's office, the amendment to the, I'm probably wording this inappropriately, but the amendment to the charges put before us.
I don't know if that meets the need of the motion.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. The motion would be to grant the motion for reconsideration and allow the amendment of the underlying complaint.
Can I just say what he said?
So moved. Sandy, you have that? So the board's benefit, one more time. The motion, please. Do you have the motion down?
No.
I'm sorry. So
the motion, I believe, was, if I can do this, as a chair, move to grant the state's motion for reconsideration and adopt the amended case overview.
Can I do that? Okay, so Silver, are you comfortable with that?
Okay, so I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Tom Kelly, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any conversation? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye, as opposed to saying nay. Motion carries. Thank you. Brings us to case number 418-168, Stephen D. Geyer.
Good morning, Seth Paul Greaves, Assistant Attorney General. Before you, you have the case of Stephen Geyer, former employee with the Arizona Department of Transportation. This is actually the first time that you are seeing this case. Mr. Geyer was terminated from Department of Transportation in December of last year. After investigation, between April of 2016 and December of 2018, he was counseled or received disciplinary action approximately 18 times, involving allegations of neglect of duty, insubordination, policy violations, and unacceptable conduct, citizen complaints, discourteous treatment of citizens, supervisors, and employees. The conduct, majority policy violations, he had progressive discipline. They put him on performance improvement plans, ended up with a 40-hour suspension, 80-hour suspension, eventually termination. None of the conduct was overly egregious. Had poor judgment of speeding through the port of entry. At one point, he left the port during duty hours without authorization. He would conduct traffic stops in his personal vehicle. A lot of yelling at customers, truck drivers, failing to timely follow up on inspections. Before you, you have a consent agreement for a 3-month suspension from December 7th, 2018 to March 27, 2019. In discussing with staff, it was believed that the allegations may not rise to the level of the board taking disciplinary action. However, given the volume of it and the fact that the progressive discipline from his employer kind of didn't get his attention, we felt that a 3-month suspension may get his attention and kind of mature him to kind of go straight and kind of pay a little bit better attention to his duties. So we believe that the 3-month suspension would be appropriate in this matter, and we'd ask that you would approve that.
Question, Mr. Graves?
Mr. Chair, would not a better way to get his attention do a 3-month suspension going forward instead of in the past? I mean, I understand why we do it in the past, but...
If you want to go forward, can reject the offer. We can present it to him, and if he doesn't accept it, bring it back to you for initiation of proceedings.
I mean, I don't want to, sabotage all the work that's been done, but, you know, I understand why we do these in the past suspensions and stuff, but, you know, at some point, if we're trying to send a message to somebody, is that going to really give them the message versus clear? But I'm happy to do what we said we're going to do, but...
We did it this way to be consistent with how you've done other cases, but if you feel it's more appropriate going forward, again, we can present that to him as an option if you decide to reject it.
Any further thoughts?
The 3 months is the concern. He's already been without work, so he's been without a paycheck for 3 months, so he's already he's taken the hit.
Right.
So going back, the hit's already been made. If you go forward, it's becoming more punitive.
That makes sense to me.
I move to. Can I make a motion?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I've got this one right here. I'm good to go. I move to accept the consent agreement for 3-month suspension of peace officer certification beginning December 27th, 2018 and ending March 27th, 2019.
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, sir. Thank you. That brings us to case 17-093, Eddie Conaway.
Mr. Brockdell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Mark Brockdell with the Attorney General's Office. And Officer Eric Wilson is here on behalf of Officer Conaway.
Not an officer.
Did I just call you that?
I'm an attorney.
Did you stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night?
In front of you, members of the board, is a proposed consent agreement decision and order for your review. Post requests that you accept the consent agreement. There's a little bit of a backstory behind this consent agreement. Some board members that were here in January of 2018 considered a prior consent agreement offered on behalf of Officer Conaway. Specifically, in January 2018, the board considered a consent agreement between proposed by Post and Officer Conaway and Eric Wilson for retroactive suspension for his conduct in this matter. Specifically, what the conduct is that he failed to complete a police report and include the use of force that led up to an arrest of an individual. So what happened was, in real time, I received this file. About a year had passed, and during the investigation into this case, came to a recommendation to resubmit this case to the board with a second consent agreement. This consent agreement is different than the prior one. In this consent agreement, the recommendation is that Officer Conway receive the 120 hours of retroactive suspension time as stated in this consent agreement, but that he also agreed to 40 hours of prospective suspension time for a total of 160 hours of suspension time. And so as part of this preparation, one of the questions I anticipated was what has historically, how has the board disciplined an officer under similar circumstances? And I'll just share what was found is that when the board is faced with a case where an officer does not complete a report thoroughly, but makes up a story in their report or adds information that is false, fabricates information, then the board has historically revoked certification. It's postposition that this case is not that case. This is a case where the officer just didn't write his supplement and include the force that was used in the matter, and specifically palm strikes, knee strikes, in particular done by the other officer in the case. So the other group of cases of involving a failure to complete a thorough report are those cases where the officer repetitively fails to complete a report. And you will see those cases where an individual officer has a grouping of 8, 12, 20, 30, 50 cases where they're not impounding evidence or they are not including witness statements or they're not following up and conducting a thorough interview. They're not interviewing, re-interviewing witnesses or suspects. They're not filing cases for review. So those are those other line of cases when you have a multitude of failure to report, and in those cases the board has historically revoked. In this case we have an officer in one instance where he did not thoroughly complete his supplement. The other officer who was involved in the arrest didn't do a supplement at all. And so those are sort of the line of cases that we have. And so in this case with Officer Conway, postposition is that Officer Conway did not complete his report. However, post, when they reviewed the information in the file, concluded that Officer Conway's use of force in this matter himself was not in violation of Arizona law, that under the justification statute for use of force for a police officer, that the force that Officer Conway used was within that statute and would have been justified, but Officer Conway didn't write a thorough report. And if he had, then his actions in post-opinion would have been within compliance. He wouldn't be here in front of the board. So I'm hoping I'm being fairly clear. I'm always willing to answer any questions. But in this case, based on the circumstances, we believe that the discipline imposed or recommended that the board accepted.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
In terms of the other officer, what was the disposition in his case?
That's one of my other 19 files, Director Ryan, that I'm waiting for to do. It's still waiting to be litigated, to be resolved.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, I think we watched a video presentation of that incident.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, Director Ryan, yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I've got a couple questions. Why is this a Daisy Post? This seems to be an internal matter for Phoenix PD. This is, sadly, I have to say, I see egregious violations of failure to write reports, and they remain internal matters. This person doesn't have an integrity issue on this. You've got two different parties involved. It doesn't sound as though he's the one who executed the use of the force.
Deputy, the state's position of that is correct, and that the other officer who did a running jump onto the back of the person to be arrested, his case probably pulled Officer Conway's case along with it, kind of grabbed it and pulled it along. That's my opinion, and so it was brought along to Post, and it is a deficient report writing case without an allegation of dishonesty.
I just don't think that that's the position of this board to weigh in on that. I think that's an internal affairs matter for Phoenix PD, and if they're going to deal with it in the manner in which they deal with it. But because he fails to write an aspect, he still wrote his report, he still wrote a narrative, but he fails to check a box or one part of the use of force component of the DR. If he's already going to be dealt with at Phoenix PD, whatever that punishment is to me, should be all that he's getting. I don't think he should be getting secondary punishment. And if we're going to start doing that for guys who do something in a report like that without some other part of an internal investigation that says he lied or purposely omitted or did this or did that, we're in the wrong neighborhood. I don't think that's the position of this board that we should be weighing in or suspending him any further.
Mark, if I could, because I actually agree. My problem is that this document that I have in my folder, I guess, is not complete because it doesn't have the prospective discipline in the decision order part of it. It just has the three prior suspensions. But it seems the disconnect I'm having is hearing what's already been done with the amount of suspension, 160-hour suspension, and not knowing exactly why would it be that severe in this case is a little bit of a disconnect for me as well. And so am I missing something? Are we missing something that there's more to this? He's been suspended for 3 weeks already back in 2016, correct? And now we're going to suspend him in 2019 in the future. And again, this document must not be complete because it doesn't have the future on at the bottom of this document. This seems like there's something I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, would it be possible to pull the meeting minutes from that board meeting? I mean, I remember the video, and I think I remember the conversation of why we decided to not accept, but I don't know if I remember all of the exact conversation.
Mr. Lefevre, Eric Wilson was there, and I actually listened to the meeting minutes myself, and I believe that the board, without comment, rejected the consent agreement, Officer Conway's consent agreement. And I believe both Officer Conway's and Officer Padilla's were presented at the same time, back to back. And so I think that's part of that. But but Mr. Wilson, may I have some more information to share? I'd be glad to have him.
Ms. Wilson, please, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, let me just quickly just try to make sense of this. The reason we're back on this with a little bit more of a suspension is because the board previously rejected the retroactive 120 hours that was already served. Make no mistake about it, you initiated action on this officer for a department policy. You said that he didn't complete the report. Okay, so while I agree with board member Silbert on his opinion about the case, the only reason we're back here, candidly, is to sweeten the pot so that the board will accept. For the second time, myself and the Attorney General are sitting here trying to get this board to accept the facts that we put together, accept the discipline that we put together. And to Mr. Lefevre's point earlier, Board Member Lefevre, sorry, sir, the statement was made, you know, whether this officer really understands the point. And so that's something that I think we can both agree on, is this officer got it back then. This isn't a pattern. This is one report that this officer in his 19 years of service is having to relive, mostly because of that video that we want to see so badly. And that's why before, when we brought this case before with the consent agreement, Attorney Saltz and I said, you don't need to see, board members, you don't need to see that video for Officer Conaway. He didn't get to choose his partner that day. He didn't get to grab his partner before he ran out of the car that in that instance. So seeing his video isn't going to show you what he omitted on his report, okay? It's just going to keep, as my colleague said, keep dragging him along with this case. You, before you, you have the option to accept the 160 hours that we put together. You can, I believe there is an option for adoption and then modification. So the if you believe that the 120 hours that we were previously here on is sufficient, I suppose that's within their rights, but obviously counsel and I have agreed with the 160 hours. Yes, sir.
Question. Why is this board suspending him for 120 hours? I'm still not understanding that. Phoenix PD disciplined him. This isn't the case that would normally come before AZ Post. This is a person who left something out of a police report on a use of force report that, if I'm going by what I'm hearing, that his partner should have been writing in his report or his supplement.
Board Member Silver, I can only give you my opinion. I can't tell you what the board thought when it initiated against this officer to begin with, but I my opinion is it's that video. And it's been that video for the last something years because this issue occurred in 2015. Okay? The 120 hours was served by the officer. He has since gotten, since the incident, 10 commendations. There has been a clear indication in his performance management guides that have been provided to the state that this was a one-time issue. He has time and time again been told he writes clear reports. He's a great senior officer. So this is something we were just hoping today that we could put behind the officer. That's kind of where I'll leave it.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you. You have further comments, sir? Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mark Brachtel again. Just a little more of the backdrop. I just spoke with Steve Jacobs that Phoenix Police Department terminated Officer Conaway.
No, they did not.
Strike all of that. strike all of that. I have nothing more to add.
All right. Thank you, sir. Any further questions, Mr. Jacobs?
I apologize. This came to us through the media.
The only comment I would have, and I'm not sure how I'm going to vote on this yet, but I think a material omission in a police report is dishonest. Whether this officer should have put it in his report, clearly it should have been in the report of the officer who used the force. So I'm struggling a little bit with that, but I think a material omission in a police officer's report is a form of dishonesty, and it would clearly get you on a Brady list, in my opinion.
So real quick question. So the 120 hours already served, was a discipline decided upon by the Phoenix? They suspended. We just...
Right.
Oh, thank you. So some conclusion was created by Phoenix PD to say at least 120 hours. Thank you, sir.
Okay. So just for clarity, he's already been suspended 120 hours by Phoenix PD, correct?
That's accurate.
Okay. And then to Mr. Ehler's comment, two reports or two officers on the same scene and one uses the force, it's supposed to be written by the one who used the force, not the one that was there to witness the force, unless there was something that he found so drastically egregious he reports it to a supervisor. I don't there's nothing that tells me, obviously Phoenix suspended him for a reason, so maybe they feel there was an omission, but I'm not hearing that he purposefully omitted this section from the report. I don't know if he expected the other officer to write his report in detail enough to depict what the use of force was. Again, I'll go back to the same thing. He's already been suspended 120 hours by Phoenix PD. I don't think this board needs to take any further action.
Further conversation, discussion?
Mr. Chair, so yes, I got a question, and I agree with what Heston's saying. So if we reject this, can we also, and I agree, Mr. Wilson, with you, is this having this over his head's not fair either. I mean, we got to make a decision here. If we reject this, I know accepting it just puts it away and we're all sealed, but I don't know if that's the fair answer here either. So if we reject it, can we modify or make a motion to say it's done? I mean, how does that work? I'm asking legal.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, you can reject or modify this agreement, and you could modify it by simply striking out any prospective discipline and accepting the consent agreement with the discipline that's already been imposed. And it would probably need to be re-signed by the officer, but that would be the modification that you would make if you chose to do that.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not your attorney, that's your attorney, but I believe you could also reject it and make the comment that you want this to be dismissed and then we come back and reconsider too. Check with your attorney on that.
You can reject it, but the case won't go away. It's not, it isn't agendized in order to, you know, dismiss the case. So you would, again, have to go through that process.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion. I'll stand this time. I make a motion to reject the consent agreement and make a recommendation for no discipline.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Chris Atkins, second.
So did you get who second? Thank you. I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you. Brings us to case number 18-134, Jonathan J. Rambler. Mr. Henry.
Good morning, Chair, Board. On February 20th, the Board initiated proceedings against the Peace Officer Certification of Jonathan Rambler, formerly with the San Carlos Apache Tribal Police Department. In summary, on June 1st, 2018, a female reported that she had sexual contact with former Officer Rambler on numerous occasions while he was on duty with his department, during which time the officer ignored radio calls as well as lied to his dispatcher about his report status. When questioned originally by the police chief without an NOI, Officer or John Rambler lied to his police chief and said the contact did not occur. Later, under NOI, after an IA report, Rambler initially lied to those investigators after being served NOI and Garrity Rights read. Sometime during that interview, he actually came clean and said, yes, the acts as she alleged occurred. At that point in time, he was terminated for dishonesty to both the police chief and the investigator and for having sexual relations with another person while on duty with his police department. As a result of his termination, he was terminated from his agency. Research by Arizona's staff determined past and similar fact circumstances resulted in revocation.
Any questions for Mr. Henry? Seeing none, I entertain a motion.
Paul Ayler, I'll make a motion to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and impose a sanction of revocation.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any conversation? None. Seeing none. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Case 18-139. Jordan N. Robbins, Mr. Henry.
Mr. Chairman, on February 20th, 2019, the board voted to initiate proceedings and deny a certified status of Jordan Robbins, a former Tucson police recruit. On the 26th, a notice was sent out by regular and certified mail. At this time, Mr. Robbins has not contacted Arizona Post as required and requested no hearing. In summary, on October 24th of 2018, an Arizona Post hiring audit was conducted of the Tucson Police Department for new recruits. It was noted by the investigators, by the compliance specialist, that Mr. Robbins had several inconsistencies on various applications with Tucson PD and that he had failed to actually list his applications in with the Border Patrol to the police department. Mr. Robbins had already was attending the Tucson Police Academy when the department's background investigative unit challenged the veracity of Mr. Robbins' application process.
After further review, they noted that Mr. Robbins actually admitted to being untruthful and not disclosing the Border Patrol applications, specifically his marijuana usages. At first, he applied with Border Patrol. His usages limits were too high. Border Patrol wouldn't accept his application. He ended up going back to Border Patrol, falsifying his application, which allowed him to compete in the process by lowering his marijuana standards. After this review, Tucson Police Department's hiring unit made the decision to go and get Mr. Robbins out of the academy and terminate his employment. And that was on October 26th. He was pulled from the academy and terminated by the police department. Again, research by Arizona Post staff determined in past similar fact-based circumstances, the board's action resulted in denial of certification.
Any questions from the board?
Yes, sir.
So, Chief Kelly.
In this case, he didn't graduate from the academy.
No, sir, he did not.
So did he actually ever have certification?
No, he was appointed only, sir.
It's a denial. Okay. Further questions? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mark Downs, make a motion to accept the findings and facts, conclusion of law, and oppose action, denial, and certification.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
The motion is Tom Kelly, second. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor of the motion, any further conversation? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Thank you, sir. Next case, 18-148, Patrick W. Beckley. Mr. Henry.
Mr. Chair, Board, on February 20th, 2019, the Board voted to initiate proceedings against Peace Officer certification held by Patrick Beckley, formerly with the Chandler Police Department. A complaint notice was sent to him both by certified mail and regular mail and not returned. To date, Mr. Beckley has not contacted this office for any type of hearing. In summary, during the months of May 2018 and November 2018, Mr. Beckley made 58 arrests. These subjects were cited and released from custody. Mr. Beckley falsified his departmental reports when he stated that he had photographed and fingerprinted 56 out of the 58. In truth, Mr. Beckley had not photographed or fingerprinted any of those 56. When questioned, Mr. Beckley lied to his supervisor, insisting he did not photograph, that he did photograph and fingerprint and cite and release these arrestees. However, it was discovered that Mr. Beckley had not logged on to his fingerprint scanner since 2017. Mr. Beckley did not participate in an internal investigation and resigned from the Chandler Police Department on November 15th of 2018. Research by Arizona Post staff determined in past similar fact-based circumstances, the board's action resulted in revocation.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll give a shot at this one.
Go ahead.
Make a motion that we accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and impose a sanction of revocation.
Chuck Ryan, second.
I have a motion from Chief Kelly, seconded. Further discussion? In favor, signify agreement with the motion by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Case 18-169, Jason D. Corona. Mr. Henry.
Mr. Chair, Board members, on February 20th, 2019, the Board voted to initiate proceedings against Peace Officer certification held by Jason Corona, formerly with the Phoenix Police Department. He was sent both mailings and has not responded to Arizona Post or requested a hearing. In summary, on August 30th of 2018, Mr. Corona submitted to a urine sample as part of his employer-mandated drug test. On November 7th, the urine sample submitted by Mr. Corona tested positive for cocaine. When contacted, Mr. Corona did not participate in an investigation and retired. Research by Arizona Post staff determined in the past and similar fact-based circumstances, the board action resulted in revocation.
Any questions from the board? Seeing none, I entertain a motion.
Make a motion that we accept the findings of fact and conclusions of the law and impose the sanction of revocation.
Paul Ehlers, second.
Mr. Chief Kelly with Paul Ehlers seconding. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Case number 18114, Victor H. Valenzuela. Mr. Henry.
Mr. Chair, board members, my final case. On February 20, 2019, the board voted to initiate proceedings against peace officer certification held by Victor Valenzuela, formerly with the Miami Police Department. Both letters were sent out and no contact to Arizona Post within that 30-day time period. In summary, on January 20th of 2018 at 1:18 a.m. in the morning hours, former officer Vela was dispatched to smoke coming from a bus and possibly a bus being on fire. This occurred on Sullivan Street near Veterans Park or Memorial Park. Mr. Valenzuela stopped and talked to the reporting party who happened to be at the Wild Horses Saloon in downtown Miami. The bartender came out, met with our, at the time, the officer, and pointed to the direction where the bus fire allegedly was going on. She pointed to the location, noticed that the officer was headed in the right direction, and then overshot the location. Keep in mind, this Memorial Park or Veterans Park is about 500 feet away. The officer ended up going past the location. He had known just from his own personal experience there was a homeless person that frequently started fires in order to keep warm. Again, this is in 2018, January of the month. He allegedly got out of his vehicle and searched for this person at the location other than the bus, and after about 7 minutes got back into his vehicle, cleared the call for service saying that he couldn't find anything. At that point in time, he drove across town just to on another unrelated traffic event, but that couldn't be verified either. Approximately 2.5 hours or two hours and 40 minutes later, another call came in for a bus fire. Again, that location was about 500 feet from the bar where he first went. On his second time locating the bar, he saw where the fire was. He saw fire personnel and other police emergency vehicles there. At that point in time, they located a deceased. It was the person that he was looking for. That person was inside of the van and perished after thermal burns and smoke inhalation. An internal investigation was launched at the time, and the officer later was, the results of the internal investigation is that he failed to conduct a timely and thorough and accurate investigation of a reported bus fire in which a local man died as a result of thermal injuries and smoke inhalation. As a result, Mr. Valenzuela was terminated on March 23rd for failing to locate the bus fire and failing to remain in the area to locate the bus fire after the original call. Research by Arizona Post staff determined that past similar fact-based circumstances that the board action has resulted in revocation.
Questions from Mr. Henry? Seeing none, do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion. So, make a motion to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law and impose a sanction of revocation.
Chief Kelly has made the motion. Do I hear a second?
Mark Daniels, second.
We have a motion and a second. Any conversation? Seeing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those say nay. Motion carries. Brings us to our new cases. Mr. Caldwell. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Billy Caldwell, one of your compliance specialists. First case I have for you today is former officer Jose Tavina from Salt River PD. On April 28, 2018, Officer Tavina and his wife attended an event at the Casino del Sol near Tucson. Officer Tavina's wife was denied access to the casino, possibly due to intoxication. The casino staff kind of stopped her at the entrance and said, can't come in. Officer Tavina and his wife decided to leave the area, and witnesses saw him grab his wife by the wrist and push her against a guardrail in the parking garage, apparently during some kind of argument or dispute. Officer Tavina was arrested and charged with assault and disorderly conduct in Pascua Yaqui Tribal Court. He later satisfied the requirements of an adult diversion program, and charges against him were dismissed. He resigned from Salt River PD. I'd be glad to answer any questions you all might have about this case.
Questions, Mr. Caldwell? Seeing none, entertain a motion.
First Pittman, I'll move that we initiate proceedings.
Motion to initiate proceedings. Do I hear a second?
Paul Ehler, I'll second it.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Mr. Caldwell, case number 19003, Rochelle J. Thomas.
Yes, sir. This is regarding Sergeant Thomas, formerly with the City of Glendale Police Department. On September 19, 2018, Sergeant Thomas's 17-year-old daughter made statements to friends which led them to believe she might be a danger to herself. Her friends called the police, and officers responded to her home. She was not there at the time, but returned while officers were searching for her. She stated she went to her mother's closet, got an unsecured handgun, and walked out into the desert. She fired the weapon once, then left it on a trail near her home. She was not injured physically, but it's my understanding that she was transported to a medical facility for evaluation. Officers did recover the handgun, which used to be Sergeant Thomas's duty weapon at Glendale PD. Investigators learned that there was a standing court order in place, the court order was active at the time of this incident, that prohibited Sergeant Thomas from keeping any firearms in her house until her daughter turned 18 years of age. Sergeant Thomas was on duty when the incident occurred, but she did acknowledge being aware of this court order. However, from her interviews, she seemed unclear exactly what she needed to do to comply with the provisions of this court order. She seemed a little bit confused about, you know, how to actually be in compliance with this order. Glendale PD actually determined that she was in violation of the court order and she was terminated. I'd be glad to answer any questions that y'all might have about this case.
Questions from Mr. Caldwell? Not seeing any. I'll take a motion.
Make a motion that accept the report and initiate proceedings.
Chair and second.
I have a motion and a second. Any further conversation? Seeing any. Those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say nay. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Let's wait. Case number 18-161 by Nadine Salome.
Salome, sir.
Salome.
Yes, I had to ask myself.
Give my East Coast accent, I got that one.
Good morning, sir. Members of the board, Lori Waite, one of your compliance specialists. This case on Nadine Salome, she used to work for Tempe Police Department. Back in June of 2018, they commenced an internal affairs investigation, reference her sergeant completing a memo documenting several incidents which indicated a pattern of poor performance. Her inability to complete investigations, complaints from her peer officers as to her rude and unprofessional attitude with peers, supervisors, members of the community. So as part of that internal affairs investigation, we're going to talk about two incidents this morning. The first occurring in February of 2018. She was dispatched to take an assault call. When she arrived, the victim of the assault provided details of the event and actually identified the suspect to Officer Salome. She failed to photograph the victim's injuries, and when she authored her police report, she wrote the report and indicated that the suspect was unknown and that the victim was unable to explain the details of the event due to her intoxication level. Investigators found that this report was not accurate, as her body camera footage revealed that the victim actually did ID the suspect and had very specific details of the event. When she was questioned about this false report, she did not deny the allegation. Second incident we're going to talk about occurred in May of 2018. She responded to a domestic violence assault call, she along with another officer. While she was there, she learned of text message and video evidence of the event. However, she failed to collect that video evidence and that text message evidence. She also failed to tell the other officer that was on scene, so he was unaware of the evidence as well, and she failed to document that in her report. When they asked her about this incident, again, she did not deny the allegation. She just claimed that she was unorganized. She actually terminated herself from the agency before the investigation was completed, and that was in November of last year. Be happy to answer any questions.
Were there any questions from Ms. Waite? Not seeing any. I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to initiate proceedings.
Motion from Chief Kelly to initiate proceedings. So I have a second.
Paul Ehler, second.
Motion is second. Any further conversation? No further questions.
All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Now the challenge. 19018, Joseph B. I'm going to do Jacek.
I think it's Zajacek, but I'm not sure. And I think
not even close.
Here.
Is he here? My apologies, sir.
Zajacek. Okay,
you.
Very good. All right. Mr. Zajacek, formerly with the Arizona Department of Public Safety. At the time this incident occurred, he was actually an officer with Douglas Police Department. So in June of 2017, he responded to a domestic violence call as an agency assist to the Cochise County Sheriff's Department. 5 days later, he authored his report, and in his report, he put that he was the second officer to arrive on scene. However, body camera footage from the Cochise County deputy indicated that Zajacek was actually the first officer on scene. So fast forward to November of 2017, when Zajacek was being questioned during a preliminary hearing on the matter, he testified that he was the second officer on scene. However, they had evidence that he was actually the first officer on scene. He fast forward now is at DPS. DPS gets wind of this. They start an internal affairs investigation. And when they question him, he couldn't offer a reason other than it was just wrong. I checked with the Cochise County Attorney's Office to see if his misstatement affected their criminal case in any way. It did not. The suspect was convicted of the crime, and he was not Brady listed. He resigned in lieu of termination from DPS, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have to recuse myself from this case.
Thank you. Does that have any questions, Ms. Waite? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I make a motion that no action with the agency discretion.
I have a motion from Chief Kelly, no action, agency discretion. Do I have a second?
Chris Pittman seconds.
I have a second. Any further conversation? Seeing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
Nay.
I believe I have one nay. Motion carries. Thank you, Ms. White. That brings us to future agenda items. Matt, anything?
No, sir, unless the board has something they'd like us to take a look into.
Don't see anything, so thank you. And then we have a call to the public today. Anyone from the public like to address the board? Okay, thank you. Now I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
Chris Pittman, motion to adjourn.
Thank you, sir. The board is adjourned. Thank you.